This is the latest podcast for the Health Matters, and it is coming off the theme of alcohol and Alcohol Awareness Week, which I think it runs through to the 12th of July. Perhaps start with you, Matt, as an overall issue. I guess alcohol awareness, or thinking about alcohol, it has been around for thousands of years, of course. When we're sort of worrying or talking about alcohol, what are our primary concerns?
So I think it's really important to point out that alcohol is one of the leading preventable causes of ill health, alongside tobacco, overweight and obesity, and some of the other factors that lead to long-standing and chronic disease. Alcohol is associated with about 200 diseases and conditions that affect our bodies, but also is associated with quite a lot of potential immediate harms like injuries, accidents, and sometimes in extreme cases poisoning directly from consumption of alcohol itself. We are really interested in making sure that we are trying to prevent ill health and keep people as well as possible, to keep them living long, healthy and independent lives. So alongside looking at some of the other risk factors, particularly tobacco, alcohol is one of the key areas that is really important to look at prevention. In particular, we want to make sure that we're being really clear that alcohol harm exists on a spectrum. The more you drink, the more likely it is that you're going to be at risk of developing some harm or a long-term condition that has a negative impact on your life, your well-being, your relationships, and potentially think other things more socially, like your finances or even criminality and things like, along those sorts of lines. So fundamentally, it's an extremely important area for us to look at how we are supporting people to reduce their alcohol consumption, protect their health and well-being, and have long, healthy, happy lives.
Thea, Motivate have been around for a goodly number of years. You were saying just before we started that I think I must have spoken to you years ago on probably very similar issues. How is the Isle of Man when it comes to problems with alcohol then? Have we improved over the years? Have we stayed much the same? Does it get worse? Where are we?
I think generally it's pretty much the same. You find that in small islands, sort of rural communities, that alcohol consumption is probably higher. At Motivate, we have seen increasing numbers of people over the years. We're reaching more people than we ever did before. So, for example, last year, I think, was probably one of the biggest years in terms of referrals. I think we had 725 referrals last year. For alcohol, which is always our primary substance of people being referred, we had about 330 something plus referrals. Again, it goes up each year. So whilst the other areas in which we specialise sometimes can fluctuate, alcohol just tends to be on a slightly upward trajectory. Last year also we had about 7,500 attendances. So that's, you know, people attending the service, not individuals, but attendances at the service as well. So yeah, we're fairly busy. So it's clear that, you know, alcohol, as one of the substances that we help people with, is causing issues for the island.
We've also recently surveyed our population on health and well-being and have found that around 13% of adults are reporting drinking above the recommended weekly limit for alcohol, and about 6% of those being classed as high-risk drinkers. It's usually more men than women. And at the moment we're seeing the highest risk drinking amongst those who are aged 35 to 44.
Why do we ignore the risks? Again, you see it, we seem to get more and more messages on the risks associated with drinking too heavily, and yet seemingly a large proportion of the population ignore it.
I think it's because alcohol's always been our favourite drug. It's been around the longest, so it's legal. So people associate it with the good times, you know, it's involved in every, from the cradle to the grave, you know, from, you know, a christening to a wedding to a funeral. Alcohol is there, isn't it? So it's definitely in Western society, it's definitely our favourite drug.
Would you echo that, Paula, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. It's unfortunate that it's wherever you go, whether you go to get a pint of milk, there's alcohol for sale. So, you know, children are exposed to the bottles of it or the cans and things wherever, whichever shop they go to, and therefore that's seen as the norm and so very accessible and seen to be very allowable in the community, in our society.
Tolerated.
Yeah.
Mm. And do you think, I mean, as far as addictions go, how does it sort of rate compared to the other issues we have on the island, maybe with obviously drugs and such like?
Maybe I prefer to, Jade, maybe that. Yeah.
So in terms of our service user population, we're not dissimilar in terms of the drug and alcohol team to motivate that our prevailing referral is for alcohol. However, a large proportion of service users that we're working with, that we continue to work with, are actually there because of other substance use. So, you know, I would say referral wise, in both services, it remains the highest substance of referral. But obviously there's different treatment pathways that then occur throughout our service in particular. So we don't necessarily see as many alcohol users, but I would say that motivate are probably seeing
what we could say, proportion. What we could talk about as well is that how we are both linked as agencies.
Absolutely.
So Motivate and the Drug and Alcohol team have formed a strategic partnership with Manx Care. So for our charity, it's great because it's given us some security to provide, you know, continuation of services. So we work really closely together, and what that means for people who have issues out there is that the service is seamless. So if you are referred to the drug and alcohol team and the referral will be best placed at Motivate, then we will meet weekly at a multidisciplinary team meeting, and those referrals can be, you know, easily moved between the two services. So there are pathways in place for detox, shared care, joint working. So that's great for the Isle of Man and for people out there who have issues, because it means that they're getting a five-star service between the two services.
And there's no break in treatment happening there. So if, for example, somebody has been working with Motivate, but actually maybe their level of alcohol use is at the point where it's deemed to be dependent, and that they would be better to come to that, so that we could look to work with them, there's no break in treatment there. We're able to work in partnership as part of that strategic partnership to make sure that there is no break in treatment, and that things we can co-work for periods of time, and then that we can continue to work with that person, and vice versa. If we get to the point where our treatment plan at the drug and alcohol team is coming to a conclusion, it may be that they need some ongoing support, and that could be that we then step them down to continue to work with Motivate.
I think it's also just really important to point out, because when you asked the question, you started with a question around addiction, and I think it's really important to emphasise that harms are not just associated with dependence and addiction. Harms begin with excess alcohol consumption before it necessarily reaches a point of dependency. So this is part of the reason that we want to emphasise, as we're going into Alcohol Awareness Week, the importance of doing activities that people can do in their own lives around making sure that they have dry days during the week, drink less than they might, consider alcohol-free alternatives and various measures that they can take to drink less and enjoy their social and lives more, because they will see a health benefit if they are drinking more than they ought to be, around their physical health and well-being, their energy levels, the quality of their sleep, and a whole range of benefits.
And Ben, you were nodding at that on the dry days and such like.
Yeah, certainly. And as Matt highlighted, the effects of alcohol on the physical body, as a mental health nurse, I'm always interested as well in terms of the effect of alcohol on mental health. Often you'll find people that have been using alcohol to almost as a survival mechanism, as a coping mechanism around maybe some unmet needs. And I think one of the interesting parts of my role is looking at what those unmet needs are and treating them, so that hopefully then the person has more options around coping skills for life, whether that's low mood, anxiety, or more severe and enduring mental health conditions that maybe for periods of time they've had to self-medicate for through feeling that they have no other option. And as Paula said before, most shops that you can walk into, alcohol tends to be one of the most easily accessible substances around.
Absolutely. So there is truth in this old adage of, you know, people seeking solace in the bottom of a glass or the bottom of a bottle. It's this idea of they're going through a very trying time in life, or maybe having personal issues. They sometimes almost feel like they escape by to drink.
It's a short-term successful option sometimes for people, but the longer-term picture is actually it tends to make those situations chronically more worse.
So Alcohol Awareness Week, and there's also Alcohol Awareness Month, I think, earlier in the year. Are these sort of initiatives aimed at trying to either stop people drinking or make people think about what they are drinking?
So it's more orientated to making people think about what they are drinking and make the choices that are right for them. Ultimately, the less you drink, you reduce your risk of longer-term harms. That's not to say that we're taking a position that we should be telling people that they can never drink alcohol, but it's people making sure that they are understanding the risks and making informed choices as a result of information that is available out there. Because it might be, when we look at behaviour change and things like that, sometimes the awareness or the nudge around making a potential change, particularly where people might be harbouring some concerns about the level at which they're drinking, might be that opportunity to take stock and consider making some lifestyle changes that would be really good for their health and well-being in the longer term. So these kind of awareness opportunities are opportunities, they create an environment where people can take stock of where they are at and make a decision that's right for them.
So the question is, and it's one you often hear bandied around when it comes to alcohol and alcohol consumption, is how much is too much? How do people know when they have a problem with alcohol?
I'd like to say it's when it's costing you more than money. One of the models that I use and is well established is the 4 L's. So if it's starting to affect your health, so we use the first L, which is liver. So liver is sort of, it represents your overall health. So if you feel like you've got some health issues, the second L is lover. So that represents your relationships. So if it's starting to impact your relationships, it doesn't mean that you're dependent, but if it's starting to cause problems at home, you know, it's affecting your ability to care for your children. The other L is the law, if it's getting you into trouble with the police, you know, maybe drink driving, an arrest for drunk. And the other one is your livelihood, your work. Is it affecting your work in any way? Are you missing work on a Monday? So if you're saying yes to any of them, then you may be going into the stages of starting to develop maybe harmful or hazardous drinking patterns. So that's going to be a risk to you and yourself in the future. So you don't have to be dependent to have a problem. It can affect anybody, and that's the key message. And then if you can identify with any of those L's, then maybe it's time to, you know, think about maybe you don't even have to come to a service, but think about having a period of time where you cut back on your drinking, have those non-drinking days, etc. So I think that's a good way of kind of like just giving yourself a quick inventory about whether it's a problem or not.
So if people were listening to that and thinking, oh gosh, I might tick one or two of those two L's, is it best to try and try and do something yourself, or should they approach, and if so, which service should they approach first if they want advice?
Anyone can phone Motivate. We've got free phone number 0808 164 627. Or you can contact us through our website. There are ways though where you can do a lot of self-help as well. You know, you don't have to attend a service. In fact, only 1 in 18 people, research shows, actually attend a treatment service. So many people are self-changers. You know, you for example, smoking, most people stop smoking themselves. May have one or two attempts to start with, but eventually they get there. So it's people, if they are feeling uncomfortable in any way, thinking it's impacting them, you know, you can contact a service or you can look at self-change.
And there are other sort of other things such as like the app, you know, an app on the phone. So yeah, there's things like I Am Sober app, which can be good to help maintain those changes and things if somebody wants to be sober. But just reducing and cutting down for a period, a good sustained period, can, as Matt says, have those health benefits for people, but also the benefits not just to themselves, but the benefits to other people around them. As Thea was saying about their love, you know, it's about their children and their families and the benefits that reducing their alcohol intake can have. So as Matt was saying about their mood and things, so alcohol changes people's mood and how they are even the day after, and how then they are around their children, their families, impacts them. You know, we have people who we see who are the following morning the children are clearing up the bottles from their parents, you know, and that impacts them. They're not free to flourish, and that's often not seen, not felt by the person who is drinking alcohol. And, you know, as part of Motivate, we can support those individuals who are impacted by addiction, and in particular, you know, alcohol or drugs and things. So we're there to support the whole family. It might be the partner who is also impacted by another person's drinking. We can help and support those people, because unfortunately alcohol is a game that everybody gets to play, but not necessarily by choice.
Still a stigma attached to people perhaps admitting they've got a problem with drink?
Yeah, it's hard, but as Thea's saying about, you know, those fours, if you're considering one of those is impacting you, it's just talking to somebody. And that might just be talking to your friends who you normally go to the pub with or normally drink, and say, I'd really like to have that spell where I'm not drinking. If you can give me some support, that'd be great. You don't have to go into any more detail, but that's a starter, isn't it? Having that conversation, you know, even just a couple of people, friends sort of sitting down about, what do you think is the norm, and what do you think the recommended units of alcohol is? You know, do you know what it is? Shall we have a go of like reducing? Because actually then they form in a team and you're all kind of trying to do it at the same time is really good. You're getting your support from others as well. And the recommended from the NICE guidelines is the 14 units per week. But also, as Matt says, having those days off. So a couple of days off per week from drinking alcohol is really good. Rather than coming home and thinking the norm is actually to reach for a bottle of wine or a few beers every night. We need to reduce for everybody's health, not just the individual, for everybody's physical health and mental health, for actually reducing down.
Jade, you were hearing about how the two, you and Motivate, sort of work together, hand in glove, as it were, to help with this. What sort of services can the Manx Drug and Alcohol team actually offer?
So generally what the service that we offer is for people who are dependent and who require what we term as kind of step three support. And we offer a variety of things. Some things that we offer in partnership with Motivate, we have a variety of kind of psychosocial interventions that we offer. We have medical input. We provide detoxes if that's required in terms of dependency. And also we have a variety of groups. So we, both Motivate and the drug and alcohol team, run and facilitate SMART groups, recovery groups, and also individual one-to-one key work support. We also signpost to other services, and as part of Motivate, we'll also signpost family members that are impacted by alcohol use to them, to their fabulous family service.
And again, when it comes to your side of things, Ben, I suppose it's something people might not necessarily think about, but how excess drinking can actually affect your own mental health.
For sure. I mean, I think all the services, we take what's called like a very much a trauma-informed practice approach to things. So acknowledging, you know, a dependency, but also looking at someone's story, what's happened to them, at what point in their life have they got to a point where they've needed to self-medicate, what coping skills have they been lacking, what's been going on underneath, ultimately what's driven and maintained that dependency. And it's looking for those unmet needs and then addressing them, because really the detox side of things is relatively straightforward in terms of addressing a physical dependency, but the psychological dependency is a lot deeper work, and that's what we like to get into really at that, as well as all the other things like Jade said, you know, in terms of the psychosocial support side of things, referring further into mental health services for really specialized therapies, things like CBT, DBT, these sides of things that ultimately then give people other coping strategies so that they don't feel like the only option they have is going back to that short-termism of using alcohol.
And are people, because obviously it's very personal, this, and are people happy to open up about this by the time they are perhaps accessing help from the Manx Drug and Alcohol team? Will they open up on these deeper issues of what maybe sparked their alcoholism in the first place?
It varies. I mean, it can take long-term work to really build trust and like a therapeutic alliance with someone. Someone may have had, you know, passing sort of encounters with services in the past where maybe it's not gone so well, so maybe there's a bit of distrust there. Often people will come to us and they acknowledge that they need to change. They recognise that the patterns that they've been going through, the outcomes never change, and often the outcomes are quite negative and impactful. So they've come to us with the idea of, actually, I know I need to change something, but I don't know how to go about doing that, and I don't know what it is that drives and maintains this. And it's down to us and them working together. We don't want to do something to someone. It's, you know, working together to kind of find out what drives, what maintains it, what it is, you know, in terms of unmet needs that we can sort of help and build, and, you know, get them to a point where, like I say, they have other options, because with dependency, addiction will take all other options away from you. It's a fickle mistress. It just wants your attention all the time. And ultimately want to get back to a point where an individual feels like they have choice again, because addiction will take choice away from you.
I think what's beneficial for both services is that actually when they come to us, they feel heard and listened to, and that helps them, you know, help make changes, doesn't it? You know, and that's beneficial to them.
Confidentiality is really important as well. So one of the things that we have at Motivate is no waiting room. So as soon as you walk through the door, you're taken straight to a counselling room, because that's one of the fears that people have, as soon, you know, that they're going to walk through a door and they're going to see a group of people and what will people think. So we work really hard at that initial therapeutic engagement, getting people through the door, giving them a warm drink, making them feel valued and listened to. And that's why our attendance rate, our DNA rate, if you like, people who don't attend, is less than 10% every year, because we work so hard at that and it works.
We do see guidelines widely published now on safe alcohol consumption. Is there such a thing as a safe consumption of alcohol?
So it's an area where evidence is growing all the time. I think the most important summary is, the less you drink, the less you increase your risk of harm, be that harm to your physical health, be that harm to your emotional health, be that harm to your relationships, and your interactions with society. Small reductions in the amount that people are drinking will bring measurable health benefits. So the guidance that we have at the moment is no more than 14 units in a week, and no more than 3 to 4 units per day. You can't have your full 14 units in a single evening. That is binge drinking.
And one unit equals?
Well, that is dependent on the strength of the alcohol. The stronger the alcohol, the more units. So a high percentage beer, a pint of it will have more than the number of units that you might expect it to. But a reasonable assumption is that about a measure of a spirit is around one unit. The more those units go up, the more potential harm you are incurring.
You get units mostly nowadays, if you look, if you're buying supermarket beers, etc., it will have the units on the bottles, so that's a good way of people checking their consumption.
I think also thinking about people who are not maybe buying alcohol in pubs, if you're talking about home and home measures, and people being aware of, you know, when you're talking about units and a measure, you're talking about the kind of legal measure.
Yeah, 25 millilitres.
Yeah.
Which is quite, if people are used to pouring out their own portions, that may appear to be quite small, but that is how small a unit is.
Yeah, but there's some fantastic zero alcohol products on the market. You know, there's the zero Guinness, there's the mocktails, there's even some
no secco.
Yeah. There's the fantastic gin, and I think even on the island there are lots of premises on the island that are selling these, and I think it's a good opportunity to actually shop local, use these things and actually sample this and try what's out there and what's available to help you through this, reducing your alcohol intake and seeing, you know, what's a, you know, oh, that might taste different. Because actually, in terms of a no secco, it doesn't look any different in a glass. A zero Guinness doesn't look any different, but actually you're benefiting your own health. So these are the, you know, the bonuses of actually reducing your alcohol. And, you know, you're less likely to drink so many of them if they're not alcohol content. So actually you're benefiting your pocket as well.
Marvellous.
I think the other thing about non-alcoholic drinks is, you know, people that are choosing to drink the zeros, they're not necessarily drinking them because they feel that they have an issue with alcohol. I think it's very much something that more recently is becoming,
yeah, you know, younger people for sure,
a different option.
Not drinking as
and
much.
Not because you've had a problem with alcohol or you feel like it may be becoming a problem, but because actually it's a good alternative choice that you can make in a social setting.
And where you're not potentially having the disinhibition that comes with drinking excessive alcohol, or potentially making a decision that might land you in some legal difficulty if you, for example, decide to get behind the wheel of a car, having consumed more units than you might have anticipated if drinks were stronger than you expected. Mm-hmm. Not that anybody should be getting behind the wheel of a car if they've consumed alcohol. The safest thing to do is always to drive completely sober.
So if people do actually want to get in contact with service in the first instance, perhaps they feel they might have an issue of some kind, we've heard that there is help out there, whether it's from DAT, whether it's from Motivate. Where's the best place to go then? Give us some contact sense, and maybe start with you, Paula. If people want to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
So certainly from Motivate, we have a free phone number, which is 0808 162 4627, or kind of a simpler number is 627 656, and we have our website, which is motivate.im, and from that people can, if they want to access our services, they can kind of refer themselves either through the website form or through the WhatsApp. Again, with the just sort of adding on things like available, so there's things like the smart recovery tools, and there's a website around that, and there are a number of different online smart recovery meetings available, not just the kind of the Monday to Friday. I think there might be some in the evenings as well, you see. So that's sometimes particularly if people are working, there's pressures at work to be there all day, people can access that, as well as, you know, accessing Motivate and Smart, the DAT and Smart meetings that we hold on the island. So, yeah.
And as Theo was saying there, there's confidentiality throughout on these.
Through all our services, yeah. We're never going to be saying to people, you know, oh, by the way, we saw them, you know, down in Tesco's, or, you know, hi there, I'm from, you know, Motivate or anything, when we see people out and about. Confidentiality is key for any of our attendances as an individual one-to-one, or for any of our group work, and that's how it is the success, really, because of the confidentiality.
Jade, drug and alcohol, is there a separate contact there that people can use?
So we operate a very similar system to Motivate. You can self-refer to us. You can pick up the phone. We also have a free phone number on 0808 1624 143. And you can contact us there, and we will go through the self-referral process for you. The alternative is, if you're working with a professional or you're seeing a professional such as your GP, they are able to make professional referrals as well, once you've shared the information with your GP or any other work that you might be working with, and we'll take it from there. Yeah.
And Matt, any other further contacts or places people can go for help or information from you?
Well, actually, the main thing that I wanted to add at the end, because I think that is two really good points of contact, and obviously there are a lot of resources out there that have been mentioned around different ways that people can use that work for them if they're looking to reduce their alcohol consumption. But I just want to be really emphatic that harm that comes from alcohol is not inevitable. We know that it's preventable. We know that people can be supported to reduce their drinking or make their own decisions to reduce their drinking. And fundamentally, it reduces people's risk of developing liver disease, cancer, high blood pressure, all sorts of long-term damage to the brain from both the alcohol directly or from cardiovascular disease. So it reduces their risk of dementia and other sort of lifelong conditions, and also improves people's mental health outcomes. So whilst a lot of people do enjoy alcohol without significant problems, reducing the quantity that you're drinking is a really effective and measurable way to see an improvement in your physical health, your emotional health, your sleep, your relationships, and your energy levels. So this Alcohol Awareness Week, we are really supporting that preventative approach to helping people to reduce their drinking and see a real benefit to their health.
And just very finally, do you think the message is beginning to sink? It's always a long-term process, these things, but do you believe that people are generally beginning to think, if nothing else, beginning to think more about what they're drinking?
We are certainly seeing that in younger age groups. As I said earlier, the highest rate of drinking that we're seeing is currently in those aged 35 to 44. But younger generations are making more use of alcohol-free spaces, alcohol-free drinks and other soft drinks, and it is not having the same societal impact amongst those age groups as we've seen in some of our older age groups.
Matt, Ben, Jade, Thea, Paula, thank you very much indeed.